No matter what, it is tough to be an in-law marrying into a family business. But can you imagine taking over that business from your mother-in-law? On this episode, we'll hear how one family made that transition happen and how it has started them on a track for 10x growth. Plus, Henry will get to interview a potential third-generation successor about his plans to maybe take the reins one day.
Do you think they can learn anything from a kid?
I know things better than you, Mom. I'm kind of an expert. Okay.
Welcome to Building Unbreakable Brands, the podcast where we talk to leaders growing businesses with a generational mindset. I'm Megan Lynch. I'm an advisor to family businesses and founder of Six Point, a brand strategy agency that helps generational brands honor their past while evolving for the future. Today, we'll be talking to Avi Siegel, CEO of Vital Signs, a second-generation business that provides sign language interpretation and transcription services. Avi is also the owner of Siegel Business Consulting and specializes in teaching consultants the art of sales and client acquisition. Avi, welcome.
Thank you, Megan. It's great to be here. Appreciate it.
I would love to just have you start us off by talking about your story at Vital Signs, because this is a pretty niche business. I mean, Vital Signs specializes in sign language interpretation and transcription, and it was started by Joyce Dworsky, who's your mother-in-law, but you are not an ASL interpreter. So what made you want to jump in and get involved in this family business?
Yeah, great question. Megan, believe it or not, you are actually the second person to ask me that today.
Oh, really? Everyone wants to know.
Everybody wants to know. It's really interesting because in this field, the agencies are all either owned by interpreters or people who are deaf themselves. And that's not my background. My background is business. I'll take you back even years and years and years. I was business from birth. Everybody knew that Avi was going into business. I think I just heard the CEO of Zumba speak the other day. He had like a mirroring story. We both at like age 6 or 7 started our first like quote unquote business. Like he was selling, I think, time with his watch, and I was like buying and selling trading cards. it's a really funny story. But anyway, so I was just always going to go into business. And so Vital Signs was started in 1987 by Joyce. Joyce really organically grew this beautiful business, and she was looking into next generations, and she has 2 kids, and none of them chose the business route. None of them chose the interpreting route. And so seemingly there was no continuity. And then once I married Brina, my wife, Joyce said, why don't you come interview as like an administrative assistant position? And I was like, okay, administrative assistant, but there's growth, right? I'll go ahead and I'll interview as the administrative assistant. And so I interviewed, got the job. I was nervous. I'm pretty sure Joyce knew exactly what she was doing. She was planning for the future in, you know, whatever way, shape, or form, if it worked out. But I interviewed, and that was probably about 12 years ago now, maybe. And I got the job, and I basically spent the next 7 years holding every position within the company until 2019, I want to say, when I took over as CEO.
Wow.
So that was the whole journey. I had no deaf experience, but I did fall in love with it. I remember when I was dating Brina, we would go to different trainings and conferences and workshops. And I'm a very visual learner. So I saw this language and I was like, I got to have it. Like, that is me. Like, I got to learn that. And so I was just super drawn to it. And I just learned slowly over the years. And then even, not having that experience growing up, I started to speak the language. I took classes at Gallaudet University. I placed out of ASL 1. I took ASL 2, 3, 4, And then I continue to be able to practice with my deaf friends, which is nice. Although I'm pretty sure they humor me a lot and they just lip read versus actually watching my signing. But yeah, I start doing that. And then I, to this day, actually still have a private tutor that teaches me sign language. So I feel like I need to always continue to get better at it. I won't be an interpreter. That's not my thing. That's not my calling. That's not my profession. But I will continuously get better and better at it. So that's the long and short of it. I had no background going into it, and then had the business background, worked really well with my mother-in-law for all of these years, even to this date. We worked out of the same office for a good couple of years, where I would go to her office and we would work together. And the joke in the family was that I was the favorite child out of me and the two blood relatives, the two actual children. But it just worked out beautifully.
So is that a big way of how you built trust and legitimacy within the company, was really like holding each position within the company and learning it and just people starting to buy in to say, oh, this guy does know what he's doing? Or what did that look like?
That's a great question. I should set you up with some of my staff to interview them to find the real deepness behind that question. To me, holding all the positions helped because I wasn't just somebody at the top barking orders. I didn't just take the quick route to the top. I knew what happened at every layer of the company. I wasn't always great at every layer, I should say. Like, don't put me in front of a scheduling system and ask me to schedule interpreters. It is an absolute failure. I think that's when I really figured out that I am way more the visionary type than anything else. But to get back to your question here, I think that helped me understand the landscape and understand what each person did in each role of their position. But maybe that helped build the trust and rapport. But I think really, I never looked at it like a son-in-law. Everything that I did, I was always focused on making my own path and really just putting my best forward in everything that I did. And that's the story of my whole life. Like, anytime I got involved in something, I was always just putting my best foot forward, putting all the effort in. There was no phoning it in or anything like that. And so I remember we worked with an HR company. It was CSI, Capital Services, fantastic HR company. And they did an audit and they did a 360 interview for me. And the person who was doing the interviewing, she was bringing me the results and she was like, I'm shocked. And I was like, uh-oh, what are you shocked about? And she was like, guess. And I was like, I have no idea. And she said, nobody mentioned anything about like your relationship.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, that's cool.
Interesting.
Like, I didn't think about it. I don't think like that. But I just feel like I always put my best foot forward and just worked as hard as possible. So people didn't see like a quote unquote privileged son-in-law going up to the top.
Yeah.
So I just didn't, I hope that all my employees would say the same thing, but yeah.
Yeah. So, cause I do think that that fear of entitlement, either that people, that there's going to be a perception of entitlement, or that even if you don't intend to, that you could sort of put that forward into the business, which, yeah, would not be a healthy thing. So,
definitely.
And also knowing that, you know, you didn't come from this business, this world, how did you build credibility with clients, with kind of more of the external stakeholders within the company?
Yeah, it's also a very good question. I think, I built that credibility as Vital Sense as a whole built that credibility. We were continuously building the credibility, I would say. So Vital Signs, we would never let an assignment go unfilled. And that was the core of us and our values. And we were always kind of true to ourselves in that sense. And so when other companies were shifting interpreters around because they could make more profit off an assignment, so let's say there was a 1-hour assignment or an 8-hour assignment, right? The 8-hour assignment is obviously way more profitable for the agency. And so we would get complaints all the time that like other agencies were switching interpreters at the last minute and they would leave this other assignment high and dry. And we were like, I remember conversations with Ashley, our director of ops. We will never do that. No matter how much of a profit or loss or whatever it is, you know, we're going to view each assignment as there's a person there that wants the interpreting services for equal access communication. This one person is no better or worse than the 8-hour assignment person. And so I think that always lent us credibility, and I really followed suit in this is genuinely who I am, right? Like I genuinely care about the work we do. And I think when you show that to people and you just show your genuine self, and obviously you have these values and characteristics that match, I think that it really just builds a lot of trust and rapport really easily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. And I do think that at the end of the day, you know, people do want to be treated and, you know, there's that saying of, you know, people do business with people, right? Not with businesses,
right.
Or so yeah, that makes a lot of sense and makes sense that would be a source of not only credibility for you, but continued credibility for the brand as well.
Absolutely. I can't tell you how many times we get these amazing glowing emails from our clients. Like, we couldn't have done it without you. Like, you know, so-and-so, this person is like the most amazing because they've sat there and they've taken the time and the customer service to understand the client's needs and to be there for them in every way, shape, or form. I had an interpreter tell me probably a couple of weeks ago that Vital Signs was its number one agency that it worked for. So for everybody out there who doesn't know the industry, we work a lot off freelancers and independent contractors. And so this one interpreter said, you guys just know my preferences. And by preferences, I'll define it, you know, if somebody has a scientific background, you don't necessarily want to put them in a high-level law assignment. Right. Or if someone has a high level law, you don't necessarily want to put them in like advanced physics kind of world. And so this person said, you always know, you remember my preference. You don't try to put me in an assignment that I'm not qualified for. And it's just that connection at the end of the day and that level of customer service that is just so important to us. And so we just will keep doing that forever.
I love that. I love that. And I think it does. It's such a great reminder for what happens when you put individuals in their own place of genius, in the place where they're going to shine, and how much people feel that and are want more of that time, and that they really bring them not only their best selves to it, but they're also just going to create so much more value at that time.
Yeah, it's definitely how we bring people closer, and people want to be around us more and take assignments from us more, and clients want to work with us more, and it's really nice.
You're listening to Building Unbreakable Brands, the podcast all about brand stewardship and crafting an enduring legacy. I'm here with my guest, Avi Siegel, CEO of Vital Signs, a generational family business that helps businesses and organizations bridge the communication gap with sign language interpretation, captioning, and transcription services. So, Avi, we were talking a bit about the people part of the business, because your company is so focused on people and the who behind what's happening. But it's not easy to make a transition from a founder-led business to a second-generation business. And often there's a big drop-off between companies. The companies don't often survive that transition, because oftentimes there's something that a founder is bringing that becomes really hard to keep in the business or replace in the business. And the founder that you're trying to replace is your mother-in-law. And I can't probably see, and I'm sure listeners at home are thinking that like there's not really a move that's much more emotionally high stakes than that. So so I'm just curious how you guys approach that transition and were there things about Joyce in the company that you felt like you had to try to replace, or was there something missing that you felt like you could bring?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, absolutely. The transition itself actually started happening way before either Joyce or I knew it. I think that it was just going on in the background and it was looming and people felt it and were aware that it was coming, even probably before Joyce and I knew that it was coming or were aware that it was coming, I should say. Yeah, so the we didn't really have any resources for family-owned businesses when we were making this transition. We were just flying by the seat of our pants. And so looking back, we definitely could have done things way differently, way better, but we were incredibly fortunate with how it happened. And I think Joyce was very intentional about it, more than I understood what was going on. But she was really clear that, you know, she was growing the business to a certain point, and then it was at a point where she wanted somebody else to take the reins and continue to grow it. And she really, you know, created this company naturally and organically by, you know, being the first vendor, let's say, on a contract, and then them saying, hey, bring more. And so she brought more and brought more, and an agency began. And so her purpose wasn't to like grow a multi-million dollar, you know, tens of million dollar company. And then, you know, whatever it was, her goal was to grow a company to a nice size to support all the people that it supported, you know, financially for salaries and whatever it was. And so it got to the point where perhaps maybe she just had this epiphany where she was like, it's time, you know, like this is not necessarily my comfort zone. This is not necessarily where I want to be. And so she really just passed it off to me. And I will say that she did an amazing job of stepping back. So many times we hear about these transitions where then the founder is kind of like still there, but still not, but still there, but not supposed to be there. And Joyce is not, you know, gone by any way, shape, or form. She's still active and she still helps with a lot of things, and she has her role. But she was really good at releasing the, I'm going to call it the CEO reins, which helped me really to grab them and step up, right? So there wasn't this kind of like push pull where it's like, they're yours, but like, I really still want to be involved. Mm. Like she knew that she wanted to pass it off. But there were a very different leadership style. And so there was a big transition. She is more of an operational, detail oriented, you know, operator, so to speak. And I'm more of the visionary. And so there was a part where we had to figure out, okay, well, how do we make this transition smooth? Because I'm not the guy who's going to be watching all of the operations to make sure everything is going smoothly. I'm the guy who's going to be whiteboarding with, here's our 10X vision. Here's where we're going. Here are the crazy partnerships that we can provide. And now let's, you know, that we can establish. And now let's go out and attack them. And so really the pivotal moment was for me, was, and I'm going to have to send this to Ashley, was Ashley stepping up from, I believe it was a GM or a service manager into the director of operations role. When she stepped up into that director of operations role, it gave me the ability to say, I am going to stop being the operational bottleneck. I am going to, you know, work in my unique ability. That really gave me the ability to step out of the operations and to perform in my visionary role. But that was the void that Joyce left, right? Like Joyce was really good at being like the COO, the head of the operations. And that was not my role. So we were able to really, you know, bring Ashley up, and she filled that gap that, let's say, Joyce, you know, left behind, so to speak.
Mm. I think that that's such an important moment to just kind of spend a little bit of time thinking about, because for a lot of either founders, letting go to the next generation or entrepreneurs who are trying to let go and grow, finding those few people who you really recognize as having skills that are complementary to what you do, but are fundamentally different from what you do, and that you admire, but that you don't want to do what they do, and they don't want to do what you do. And so finding those moments of those perfect compliments, I'm sure it sounds like Joyce found that in you, of somebody who was complimentary to what she did, but, you know, not trying to kind of step on her toes or not trying to be the new Joyce. You know, you're trying to just be yourself. And it sounds like you found that in Ashley. Have there been other moments in the business where you found certain people who have just really made a difference in your ability to accomplish something big or let go of something that was holding you back?
Yeah, definitely. That's also, I feel like we could probably talk all day about this one question here. I think one of the really big pivotal moments that allowed me to step back, and this is kind of related to Ashley going into the director of ops role, was recognizing an official leadership team within the business. Mm. And so now there's four of us in the leadership team, but I know that I could step out and the other three of them are going to solve anything that comes up, right? So I don't get involved in so much of the decision-making and so much of the problem-solving that I used to, let's say, 3-4 years ago. But now with this leadership team, there are people in place who want the best for Vital Signs, truly, in their heart. And so that gives me a lot of trust and faith that they will do the right thing when it comes to problem solving or whatever it is. And so having them come up as the leadership team has allowed me to let go of even more so the, we'll call them more on the ground decisions or troubleshooting. And I can continue then to now be in my role as a visionary even more, by working on the 10X vision, by working on how we're going to, you know, make the most impact. And that has been instrumental to just our growth at Vital Signs, really.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's so critical, to just surround yourself with those people who you just have that core trust that, even if they don't solve the problem exactly how you would solve it, that you know that at the end of the day, you're going to be aligned in terms of how you're thinking about it and how you're making decisions. And so that piece of trust, I think, is just such a huge component that does allow businesses to continue to grow and stay stable, even through leadership changes or flux within a market or a company.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm curious, you know, you mentioned a couple times about, you know, thinking bigger about Vital Signs and kind of 10X vision and really pushing the company forward. How has Vital Signs changed from when Joyce founded it in the 80s to now, what the opportunities exist for the company, both right now and then as you look into the future?
Yeah. Wow. So I was just talking with one of our employees today, Jessica, who is celebrating her 10 years at Vital Signs. And we were kind of reminiscing on where it was back then. And she said, we've made like a 10-year leap. Like, we just completely skyrocketed in probably the last like 3 years, I want to say, just in terms of our systems, our processes. We've upgraded everything multiple times. And we've looked internally at our structure. Actually, when I took over as CEO in 2019, I had no idea we were about to go down a global pandemic. No idea. But the first thing I did when I got in is I said, we're going to look internally, we're going to look structurally, and we're going to strengthen ourselves from the inside out before looking at anything external. Before looking at our growth models, our 10X. Now I look at the 10X. In 2019, it was, we need to really strengthen our core before we can look at the 10X. And so that's what we did, which turned out to be the best possible thing we could have done throughout COVID. And that's what everybody needed to do, whether they figured that out right away or not. to the point actually where we were able to create a like little loan program for all of our service providers, all of our admin and typo transcribers, cart providers, sign language interpreters, where we said like, hey, we recognize that you may have spouses that have been laid off or partners that have been laid off or anything like that. So we designed a program where we were able to give a little bit to a lot of people. And so we helped financially offset some of their struggles. And that came literally at the same time as an email from one of the other agencies cutting everybody's rates. Like they were like, we can't sustain it. So we have to cut everybody by X amount of dollars per hour for their hourly rate. And I was just thinking, like, this shows who we are, right? Like, this is vital signs. Like, first of all, we're a family business, right? Like, that is important to us. The connection, the work family, how we treat each other, like, that is important. And so we decided we got to do something for our service providers. We have to be there for them, even if we can't be there on some grand scale. We decided instead of being on the grand scale, we want to do something small for as many people as possible. And so then we went ahead and we rolled it out. So our systems have changed 100 times. Our processes have become more and more formalized, more and more just organized and just run way better. And so we're not the company that just had kind of like mom and pop systems anymore. We now have just systems that are good for us now and growth. And so we're literally right now implementing a new system, scheduling system, operation system, which will allow our interpreters and transcribers easier way into the platform, accepting jobs, invoicing, all of that. And at the same time, allow our clients an easier way to go in and seamlessly request assignment, request interpreters, request transcribers. And so we're just pivoting into this new system, which will be with us for as long as it serves us. And then we'll move to the next thing that will serve us better. So we have that. And then we're also looking at creating an internship apprenticeship program. And so for all those, again, who are not necessarily experts in the industry of interpreting and transcribing, COVID hit and everybody all of a sudden knew about accessibility. Everybody wanted sign language interpreters. And so the demand skyrocketed. But the supply of service providers did not skyrocket at that same level. And so we began to see this huge gap spread of increased demand and not enough supply to handle the demand. And so one of the things that we're doing is we're in our plans for later in 2024, we're going to create an internship apprenticeship program. And that'll help to bridge that gap in the industry itself. So we're looking at like even on the micro level, and maybe this is a micro for some people, but on the micro level of how we can serve our clients better, how we can serve our service providers better, a new system we can bring in. We're looking at the industry as a whole. How do we help solve a problem of the industry itself? And then at the same time, we're also bringing on new service offerings. We just brought on a new service that is an on-demand service. And so within 10 to 15 seconds, you can pull up a sign language interpreter. And that it's amazing. The technology is amazing. And that really came to us because we had all of these small and mid-sized businesses saying, hey, we don't have a connection to deaf. We don't have any deaf employees. We don't necessarily do this big blast of accessibility. But we also understand that there are ADA laws. And if anybody comes to our doorstep and tries to communicate with us and can't, that puts us at a huge risk of a lawsuit. And these lawsuits could be hundreds of thousands of dollars. And so what we did was we created this new service of an on-demand service. It's a membership model service where you can have access to the system. And if you ever need it, within 10 to 15 seconds, you've got your interpreter. And so now there's all the risk mitigation is there. And if there's no risk for an ADA lawsuit when it comes to someone who's deaf and hard of hearing anymore. So that was just a way we listened to the customers, heard what they were saying, and created a new line of service. So yeah, so there's a ton of expansion on the horizon, and we're just doing new. We've brought in a couple new staff members this year, and we're looking forward to 2024 and 2034, because that's my 10x 10-year brain right there.
Love it, love it. I think that there's a lot of good things here to just kind of unpack a little bit. So one thing that I hear you saying, and this is I just want to call attention to it because it's something that I hear the opposite of a lot, is people talking about pressures within their industry as problems that they can't solve. So, you know, if they're in healthcare, if they're in construction, and they talk about labor shortages or issues getting, you know, trained workforce or having enough people with the right skills, I hear you having those same problems and pressures, but actually looking at it as an opportunity for business innovation and growth of saying, well, you know, we don't have a magic wand, we can't change the market, but what could we do from our sphere of influence to start to put together a training, you know, if the industry problem is labor shortage, how do we become part of the solution? How do we put together training? Yeah. How do we create an internship program? How do we create the people who we need? And I just love that mindset. You know, when we go back to what separates a generational mindset or a generational business, it's having the ability to kind of step back and see some of those long tail problems. And it's not that you need to completely solve it, but you at least need a sense of agency of, I can influence this. This isn't something that I have to just live with. And so, yeah, I love hearing that from you. And I love hearing how you've done that in small ways in terms of like helping your team and your contractors through COVID, and then in big ways like this internship program. I think that's super exciting.
Yeah. I think the difference for me, and I'll only speak for myself and I'll only speak for my industry, is that if you want to be the best in the entire world at what you do, you need to be looking at those problems. When we were smaller and not thinking at that level of scale, we weren't thinking about it. We were quote unquote victims, right? Like, I'm sorry, there's no interpreter for today. You know, whatever. I mean, that would never happen to us. But like, that's what people were saying, right? Like, you know, they just had no control over it. But we're going to be the best in the entire world at sign language interpreting and transcribing. And there's no doubt. And we're already probably one of the best, if not the best, here in our area, in this region. And so we're not looking at one assignment at a time anymore. Now we're looking at, how can we, you know, quote unquote, take over the world, right? Like, how can we be the best at of the best? And now we're thinking in bigger moves, right? We're thinking about, all right, how do we solve industry-wide problems? We can solve the industry-wide problem, you know. First and foremost, we're doing this for a reason, right? This is accessibility for, this is, you know, deaf and hard of hearing. This is what we were put on the world to do, right? So if we can solve the industry, we can service more people. And that means that more individuals can have all of the services they want at their disposal. At the same time, also, we will have that recognition, and we will grow, and we will be, you know, we're already the best, but we're not the largest, right? So we want to be the largest and we want to be the best.
I love that. And I think having that vision, something to pull towards, it does give you a perspective that takes you beyond the day-to-day headaches of, you know, it's not about this one, you know, one issue or one staffing challenge, but it's how do we start to take a bigger approach to it and think longer term and think broader and think more creatively. And I think that it's just such an important mindset that then clearly has ripple effects in the business and your ability to grow. And I think that's super exciting. And it's clear that you're also thinking about vital signs in terms of, yes, understanding the industry, but also understanding some of the bigger forces at play that, you know, any industry is going to have to deal with. Anyone who's providing services right now is going to have to both, you know, have very similar challenges and opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that we haven't touched on your other side of your life. You also have a consulting business on top of the work that you're doing with Vital Signs. And I'm curious how you knew when you were ready to start something new, because it sounds like, you know, you're an entrepreneur from an early age. You have this bug to start businesses, to grow businesses, but that could easily leave you with a whole bunch of things that you're not doing particularly well, and just busyness and not effectiveness. And so how did you know when you were ready to start something new and also not hurt the team at Vital Signs and what you were building there?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't think that I knew the time is now. I don't think I thought that constructively. I dive into things and then I just go, and I don't accept no for an answer, and I don't accept failure. And so before even, you know, creating this consultant, you know, this consultancy, I was always mentoring as many business owners and executives that I thought would benefit from my knowledge and experience. And so after doing that for about 5 years, it just felt like it was time to do that on a much larger scale. And so, you know, fun fact, I probably consume about 30 to 40 books a year on Audible. And everything that I've done, all the business ventures, even if they weren't my own, if I got in there, I ended up running it or running some segment of it. And so I just felt like I always had this experience and this knowledge that could help people. And so I just wanted to help more people. And so it got to a point where I said, if I really want to look at this on the 10X scale, right, I need to create this new business, this new venture, and give it a real shot. And so that's what I did. I created it. I gave it a real shot. And then ironically, the funny thing is within probably about two and a half months of launching, I was completely full. My calendar was completely full. I was turning down clients. I had no more room to bring on anybody else.
Wow.
And that's kind of how I decided, oh, okay, client acquisition, that is a sweet spot. And I need to now teach that to other consultants so that they can do and build and, you know, just build what I built. And, you know, there were, I saw this need, these consultants that they were either taking one of three paths, I'll say. Either they decided, you know, they wanted to go out on their own. Let's say they were a marketer, right? They were a CMO, or let's say they were a director of marketing at some really high level corporate company. And they decided, I want to go out on my own. They went out on their own, and either they couldn't figure out how to do client acquisition, they went right back to W-2. Or they figured it out at some mid-level range, which wasn't really satisfying their income levels. It wasn't really making them happy. Or they figured out the client acquisition and they created an amazing consultancy. And then they can go ahead and bring in some of their children. Some of my clients are bringing in their kids and showing them the beauty of business, which is like a double whammy, right? Like, I'm getting to teach people how to create really good livings for themselves and for their family. And for a lot of them, it's financial freedom and generational wealth.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that is a great segue to our last segment, because we are going to give that very thing a test here on Building Unbreakable Brands. This is the podcast for leaders with a generational mindset. And I'm here with Avi Siegel, who's both an entrepreneur and business coach for consultants. And in our last segment, we are going to turn the mic over to this next generation. My 8-year-old son, Henry, is going to interview your son, Pace, who's also in second grade, so we can hear what's on their minds. So I guess we just turn it over to them and see what happens.
See how it goes. Fingers crossed.
Hi,
Pace. Welcome to Building Unbreakable Brands.
Thank you.
What is the hardest thing about being a part of a family business?
Shredding paper.
What kind of thing, what papers do you specifically shred?
Those are notes.
Mm-hmm. So like junk mail?
Yeah.
Do you think you're ever going to want to work at Vital Signs?
No. I'm going to play football when I grow up, I'll be a doctor.
Nice. Sounds like a good career. Do you have any advice for your dad? So, do you think you could teach him something?
I don't think so. Because he taught me everything.
Yeah, and he's the one with the business own stuff, do you have a favorite joke?
Why can't you play hide and seek with Pikachu?
I don't know.
Because he always peeks at you.
Oh, yeah, I heard that one, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good one. That was great. Thanks so much, Pace. It was fun talking to you.
Thank you.
Oh, I just loved hearing Pace and Henry chat. That was so fun to hear the next generation really start to get their voices heard so early. I hope that you were able to take away some energy and ideas from Avi's vision to 10X Vital Signs. I love that he's developing solutions for industry issues and using that as a catalyst for exponential growth. If you enjoyed this episode, please be sure to subscribe to the podcast and don't forget to leave us a review.
Thank you for listening to Building Unbreakable Brands, or BUB as we like to call it.